You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
Well, welcome. It's great to have you here. Welcome to the second of our series of Rethinking Work. The topic today is Rediscover the Goodness of Work. Is that possible to rediscover the goodness of work? My name's Glenn Honberg. I lead the City Bible Forum. It's great to have you here. Well, it's interesting that the topic is rediscover the goodness of work. Work doesn't always feel that good, does it? Here's one of the reasons. Have you noticed this? The evolution of the employee. Used to work 9 to 5. Now, mobile technology, you're always on. You're always expected to be available to answer an immediate. You actually used to have work in a corporate office and had this goal of the corner office in the corporate office. And now it's hot desks. You don't have any space to call your own, no place to lay your head. I mean, not that you lay your head down at work. Company equipment, supply, now kind of liberating, bring your own, but also frustrating. Have to bring a whole bunch of your own stuff, doesn't always work. IT people get grumpy at you, you get grumpy at them. Yeah, have you noticed that? So work is not, doesn't feel always that good. It really has changed, I think, in the last decade with this kind of constantness and the kind of digital disruption. So that makes work not feel so good. But here's the other reason work doesn't feel so good is people. This is a sign I found. Don't you think that's kind of true? I think it's probably a real sign. I look quite closely at the picture, and it is actually a photo, because in the top corner you can see a reflection of some background scene. So I don't think this is just made up digitally. I actually think this is a real workplace photo. Work doesn't always feel good because there's people there. And bosses and structures and forced to do things not necessarily the way you'd like to do them and all those difficulties. But also, and we touched on this yesterday, so often work doesn't feel good because the goodness is tied to the reward. And we talked about this yesterday, tying the goodness to the reward doesn't always work, does it? So this is, depending on how old you are, Jerry Maguire, Show Me the Money. Do you remember it's all about the football player who just wants to play for the money? And so what is he playing like? It's terrible. He's self-centered, self-interested. And it's not until he starts to learn to play the game for love that he's rescued. And also, so is Tom rescued because he's in it for the money. And gets changed as well. So I think a few of those things make work feel not good. This is my summary slide of why work doesn't necessarily feel good. Things I hate about work, waking up, humans and working. So I don't know if that resonates with you, but work seems like it ought to be good, doesn't it? It actually feels like it ought to be good. At various points, maybe when you were studying, the thought of a job or a career in some area actually appeals. And sometimes when you're at work, work does seem good, but it seems so elusive to have that goodness and hold it. Well, I want to explore with you today, from a Christian perspective, an opportunity to rethink work, whether you're a Christian or not, to just see if God is in the mix of work and our lives, what could that or should that look like? So I'm going to do three kind of headings. Work is actually a spiritual activity. Work is about caring for the world, and work is about caring for people from a Christian perspective. And I'm really going to use this text out of the first couple of chapters of the Bible as a starting point and refer to this a couple of times. I'll just read it out. The Lord God, that's God the Creator, took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. And the Lord God commanded the man, "You are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. When you eat of it, you will surely die." So man has the whole run of the Garden of Eden, which is literally the Garden of Paradise. And the first thing you actually discover is actually work is a spiritual activity. See, he's put man, humanity, in the garden to work it and to keep it. But it's interesting, the word work there, that you can see in italics, is actually the word serve. It's the same word used in the rest of the Old Testament when a priest works in the temple. So when the priest is in the temple doing their priestly duties and serving God, it's the same word that man was using in the garden. So when Adam was going around and pruning trees, what was he doing? He was doing religious work. He was doing spiritual work. As he was digging up the ground to put seeds in, his work was actually a spiritual activity, just like a priest would have been doing. The Bible's picture is that work is a profoundly spiritual activity. It's done before God. Who is he serving? Who is Adam serving? He was serving the earth. He was actually, as he looked up the garden, he was serving the physical creation. He was serving humanity, because the garden was a place where Adam and Eve were to multiply, buy a tarago, have a big family. So actually, as he worked in the garden was to grow and grow as humanity grew and grew. And I think this is probably right. The world was, how do you put it, a wild and amazing, wonderful wilderness. And as humanity grew, they were supposed to kind of grow out into the world and fill it and subdue it in the best possible way. So, you know, come to Australia eventually, let's make that a national park, it's got lots of weird animals, we'll make New Zealand into a ski resort, you know, and actually slowly turn this garden into a wonderful world. And ultimately, they're serving God. Let me just talk about some implications if work is a spiritual activity. Actually, this would be really exciting, shouldn't it? Like, woohoo, exciting. Because there's this idea in our lives that there's this spiritual part of our lives, which happens maybe when we're meditating. Now I'm being spiritual. Or in church on Sunday. Now I'm being spiritual. Or I'm doing something particularly spiritual. But there's the whole rest of our lives. It's just physical. It's mechanical. It's functional. And it's got nothing to do with God or spirituality. Well, actually, this is true. And saying that's not true. That sacred and secular divide that they talk about is actually shattered right here. It's saying all of life is actually sacred. Even your work life is sacred. I think actually is quite exciting to actually think that your spirituality or being a spiritual being is expressed in your work. Here's another part of it. It's actually spiritual activity for God. See, that God places Adam in the garden to work it for him. So actually, that spiritual activity is not just about you, it's for God. Now, that actually ought to be a really, I think, also a great implication. Because have you ever been unappreciated at work? No one here has been unappreciated at work. My goodness, I'm shocked. No, we've all been unappreciated at work. And how does work feel? It feels terrible. But what if your boss, your ultimate boss, is actually not your middle manager? What happens if the ultimate boss is the boss, the creator of heaven and earth? See, it actually means that he sees your work. Then your work is actually done before him. So actually, it's easier to cope with the fact that your middle manager doesn't appreciate you, or society doesn't appreciate your work, because the person who really matters from the Christian perspective, he appreciates your work. See, he's given it to you. Doesn't that change the game? And in fact, in the New Testament, this idea all the way through, so Genesis, the start of that Old Testament, runs all the way through into the New Testament, such that even if you were a slave and you were working for someone, you were a slave, you were a financial slave, or even a military conquest slave, and you worked for a master, and you did the kind of work, whatever they told you, drudgery, anything they didn't want to do, you did it. It was not necessarily uplifting and demeaning. But have a look at how the New Testament treats this. Paul wrote this to the Christians in the city of Colossae. He says, whatever you do, this is to slaves, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. He's actually saying, you know, you are not working for your Greek or your Roman master. You're actually, when you work for them, you're ultimately working, he's saying, to the Christians, to the person of Jesus. And you notice that the nexus there between the work you do and the reward and where the reward comes from is broken. We so often work, you know, in this life, we talked about it yesterday, for the money, for the status, for the identity. Here, he's saying, don't you know that actually, if you're working for God, he will reward you. So if the rewards in this life seem not what you hoped for, you're freed up still to serve anyway, because you're actually ultimately working for God and he rewards you. So I actually think that's incredibly liberating, especially when work doesn't seem to give the reward that you expect. But here's a question, I guess, that flows from this. See, how can you work well for a boss you've never met? See, this is, if you're not Christian, if you're not someone who believes in God or honors Him, it's pretty hard to work well for a boss you've never met. For a little while, my sister, actually I won't name the company, she was working for a big company down in Sydney, and she was employed by a boss, I think it was actually overseas for 6 weeks or something. It was so frustrating because she didn't actually know what that boss really wanted. She didn't know what his likes were, what his goals were, what his priorities were. So she was doing projects and thinking, is this what he really, is he going to come back and say, like, so here's the challenge. Who are you working for? What is your life about? Christianity's answer is that actually life is lived for God and under Him. And the better we know Him, the better our work will actually can please Him. So work is actually a profoundly spiritual activity. That's the first big point. Work is caring for the world. Here's an interesting idea. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. It's actually the word keep. It actually has the connotations of preserve, protect, guard. What's our role in work? It's to actually guard, keep, preserve, protect. This is actually really important because some people look at the book of Genesis in chapter 1. It says humanity were put in the garden or in the world to subdue the world or have dominion over the world. And people have taken that as a license to plunder the world. But that just, it's inconsistent with this whole idea of take care. Whatever subdue means, it doesn't mean destroy or plunder or wreck. Actually, this has incredible implications in care for the world now. I actually think something like this drives us towards efficiency. Instead of efficiency being all about making money, we actually want to be more efficient. Why? Because we want to care for the world. We want to maximize the use of our resources. An implication like this is that actually encourages us towards innovation. How could we do this work better? Because we actually want to care for the resources we've got. We want to care for the people involved. Not just driven by profit, but actually how do we take care of this world? And here's the thing, it's not just for the world now. The Bible's view is that we have an obligation, not just those that are living now, but to the generations to come. So actually, this pushes us. The Greenies are right. The Greenies are right. Finally, they're right on something. The Greenies are right. What are we doing in our work to make sure it's not just for us, the world is not just for us now, but in the generations to come? Now, if we got this, if humanity got this, it would change the way we work. Take a la, for instance, Volkswagen. Does everyone know about the Volkswagen scandal? Yeah. So they needed to meet particular environmental standards. They couldn't meet them. So they just changed the car so that when the car was running on testing equipment, it was smart. They used their ingenuity, their human greatness, innovations, efficiency, and technology so that when the car was running on the testing machine, it ran in an efficient, environmental friendly mode. That's how smart the car was. Humanity used their great skills and gifts for what? Great evil. And I love the quote from the CEO. I'm not aware of any wrongdoing on my part. But can you see how if, as humanity, we took Genesis seriously, we wouldn't have gone down this path. We'd actually go, no. This search for efficiency, fuel efficiency, environmentally friendly cars, all those things actually would have been like, no, this is the right thing to do, not just because of the legislation or because of the rules. So work is caring for the world. But finally, work is actually caring for people. Work is for caring for people. So in Genesis, humanity was put in the garden to work the garden and take care of it for who? For the future generations that would come. The garden was there for humanity to flourish in and expand in. I think this is very helpful. And the New Testament picks up on this, talks about, for instance, like work is done for others. So in Ephesians, Paul writes a letter to the Christians in Ephesus and says, a thief must steal no longer, but work so that he has something to give. Work is no longer just about you as a person, but for others. Why does that matter? Have you noticed
economics.
In so much of the 21st century, we're reduced to mere economic units, to mere functionality. It's about what you can do for the organisation. So it leads to what? Casual employment. It leads to high rates of employment and high rates of retrenchment. There's no sense of like, there's a bit of an economic downturn. Let's not keep, mostly in most firms, let's not try and keep people for as long as we can. There's not loyalty to people. There's not care for people. Actually, we just get rid of them. They're gone. Yesterday, I talked about Super Pizza in Darwin. Super Pizza in Darwin, in Fanny Bay. Just be careful if you ever go to Darwin for pizza. Turned up in the news again. What had happened was a chef had had a heart attack in the back of the restaurant. So you know what they did, right? They stopped the kitchen so that they could help the chef, right? Because the people are important. No, they did not. The kitchen staff literally walked over the top of the chef to keep making sure that pizzas were being cooked and served. The manager, in his defense, said in court, look, we only served the pizzas that were already finished. We didn't make any new pizzas over the top of the body of this guy who was having a heart attack. Can you see, as a society, we've reduced people to mere economic units. We're saying work is about the bottom line of profit. The Bible's view is very different. It's not denying that money is good and valuable, but it's actually saying work is actually not just about people, but it's for people to flourish. It's actually for the benefit and goodness of people. You may have heard of this story in Dhaka in Bangladesh in June 2015. They a large textile factory, and they actually illegally built a second level, and then they put heavy generators on the top of the building. And then they noticed that there were cracks in the building. So engineers came in and inspected the building and said, actually, there's a problem. People shouldn't work in this building. But the owners forced people to go back in and work in the building and actually said that if you don't work today, we will not pay you for the month of work you've already done, because people will pay on the month. 1,100 people were killed when the building collapsed. 41 people have been indicted on charges. Can you see that the Bible's picture of actually working in a way that is for people is an idea that we profoundly need in the world? We've lost this idea. So just to conclude, and then we'll open up for some questions. If work is about caring for people, I think in our teams, so much of our work is done about teams. One of our questions is, how do I get work done? And people in teams, you know, that can be difficult. But this asks the question, not just how do I get my work done, but how do I do my work in a way that actually benefits the other people in the team? It helps them not just get their job done, but helps them as people. Am I actually caring for my teammates? Now, I know there's all sorts of different teams. You know, there's teams that work a little bit like cricket teams. Everyone has a different role. There's teams like rugby teams. Everyone actually is doing the same thing at the same time. There's teams like Davis Cup, where each person does their bit isolated from each other. But I still think even in all that, the mindset is still the same. Not just how do I work in order to get my job done, but how do I work to benefit the people around me? What about if you're a manager? I actually think these ideas should profoundly change our role as managers. This is actually saying one of your main jobs as a manager is to care for people. How do you help them progress? How are you training them? And not just seeing training as something that, you know, undermines your budget. How do I actually help relationships flourish in the workplace? How do I help people connect with their work and get it done? Now, if work is a spiritual activity, so that's what we're talking about, work for caring for people. We've talked about work as caring for the world. I think it actually encourages us to look for efficiencies, to be wise and careful and frugal and to be innovative and creative. I think this actually doesn't push against that, but it pushes us towards that. And finally, I think, coming back to this idea that work is a spiritual activity, the challenge is the better you know God and who he is, actually the better a worker you'll be and the more pleasing your work will be. But that also comes with a challenge, isn't it? It's hard to discover the goodness of work if God made work and you don't know Him? That's part of the Bible's picture. How can you please the one you don't know?